by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, co-host of The Secret Truth, along with Charlotte Brown. Anyway, this first bit of news that we're going to announce is they've just acquitted former President Trump with a vote of 57 to 43 in the Senate. And, boy, that was quite, you know, quite a vote. And this morning they messed up. They were opening it up for witnesses and found themselves in a corner because the defense said, well, we'll call Pelosi in. And, boy, that didn't go over very well. So, well, Democrats almost sunk their own boat there in a way, but they backed off of it and finally entered in this one deposition. I mean, it's actually statement, I should say, and let it be done and then went to a vote. You know, they want to get this over with. But anyway, Jay Dyer was interviewed by Alex Jones. They've got some really important things. We'll follow it up with some Robert Barnes later and some other very important news items. So here we go with Jay Dyer and Alex Jones.
I think Trump meant well. He was a nationalist. He knew America was being screwed over. But that the establishment let him win. He did win by a landslide 4 years ago because they knew they could run circles around him and use him to energize the left to basically commit any crime and then support a total police state and abandon any values they had. And I think that's clearly evident now from my perspective that at a sophisticated level we were all played. Trump himself, I know, was basically not part of that. He's very one-dimensional, actually at a good level. He really believes what he believes and is extremely pragmatic and just tries to get it done. That's my view on this, but regardless, we are just, like I said, accelerating, plunging into this great tyranny. They're shutting off the economy. What are the supporters, A, what do you think of Trump, and then B, what do you think the supporters of Biden are going to do when they learn that all this free stuff they were told about isn't coming?
Yeah, I think Trump represents that older idea of Americana, right? It's that idea of you can be your own entrepreneur, you can be your own, make your own name, right? Come up the hard way. And that can't exist in the new system that we're going into. And so even just the symbol and the image of Trump himself is a problem for the global elite. And that was why he had to be so demonized and so attacked. And I don't think they would have done that if he wasn't, you know, in some sense, anti-establishment, anti-system. As we see it. So I would say that what we're in for is, again, that great reset model of bringing in that hot tyranny that you've talked about for so long. I remember that it was an declassified Army document from about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, that you covered.
Where it's re-education
camp. Yeah, re-education camp, right. And then Hillary came
and people
out.
Couldn't believe it. The Army said, no, that's real.
Yeah.
Obama had them preparing to put us in camps.
And, I remember,
and now it's on the news, put us in camps.
And at that time, the discussion was an engineered civil war. I remember you covered it endlessly, talking about they're going to engineer a civil war, they're going to engineer, and they have to do that to divide the countries because that's the color revolution model where they've done so many other countries is to divide and split it down the middle. Even after the world wars, they would split the countries into half, East Germany, West Germany, right? And so that model is what they always do. They just split it right down the middle. They do it across the board, even in other circles, religious niche, right? They'll split religions down the middle, right? Split the Ukraine down the middle. And so they're doing that now here. And Trump represented that kind of like, what did Bannon use the phrase, like the anomaly or a chaos character, something like that, which was to sort of throw a wrench in the system. And then now the system has the ability to step in and say, oh, by the way, Trump didn't cause these problems, but they blame any problem on Trump. Now they can step in and say, oh, we're going to fix all those problems that Trump caused. And it wasn't Trump. What did the WikiLeaks say, right? All
sure.
of those WikiLeaks email pointed out that it was the Democratic Party. working in concert with the mass media, right?
And what do you make of this new thing where they come out of Time Magazine and this secret history of the shadow campaign that said the 2020 election, they admit a shadow cabal runs it, we basically stole it, we suppressed Trump supporters, we suppressed their speech. Why would they put out a 25-page article, which is pretty much accurate, bragging about their criminal activity?
Every time we have the situation where you gaslight, you throw it in the person's face, we were told for months, if you question anything, then you are crazy conspiracy theorist.
And there's no shadow group.
That doesn't
there's
exist.
No collusion to manipulate.
Even though the New York Times says there was a shadow, thank God for the deep state, but it doesn't exist.
Oh, that's a headline. Thank God for the deep state.
Exactly, right. New York Times, right? So, I mean, they're amazing because they constantly engage in that doublethink. On the way here, we were actually listening to 1984 on audio because it had been 10 years since I looked at it or read it. So we're listening to them, and literally within the first few chapters, you have the introduction of doublethink, you have the introduction, and that's what they do on a daily
basis. And why does O'Brien give him the Emmanuel Goldstein manual of rebellion? And later O'Brien goes, I helped co-write this. And he goes, but none of us completely do it because we all hate each other and kill each other in this priesthood of power. But we just wanted to hurt innocent people and wanted to steal your dreams. And Winston's like, I would have submitted to you. He goes, we just want to kill you. He's like, we want to control everything. Like, we even create the opposition.
Yeah.
It's just psychotic.
You can study reality while we write reality, right? The Karl Rove quote. And I remember you were talking about QAnon in relationship to 1984. And what you learn, of course, I think everybody knows, right? It's O'Brien that was leading that rebellion. The rebellion was fake, right? Emmanuel Goldstein, this false, you know, anti-system person, was just a cutout construct that was essentially O'Brien's philosophy himself. He was controlling that, right? Controlled opposition. And essentially, QAnon, I think, was there to step on the train of what WikiLeaks had legitimately released, right? Which was real scandal.
And to turn it into a joke.
To turn it into the nonsense, exactly.
So Q was the answer not to InfoWars, I agree with you. It was the answer to Julian Assange. Well, and to any whistleblowers.
Any, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the real guy's locked up for 8 years in solitary confinement, but then the other one's just like this cartoon thing.
Well, there's WikiLeaks, there's InfoWars, there's a lot. I mean, I'm not trying to...
No. But I agree with you that Q was the answer more than anything. How do we deal with real secret stuff coming out? We create fake secret stuff and flood disinfo.
It's
directly a result, a response to Assange.
And PR firms, right? So you can hire PR firms. If you have a thing that's coming out, a leak, right? Remember that movie Wag the Dog?
Yes.
There's this scandal coming out.
Which came out a year before they actually did the very same thing in the same country.
There's a scandal coming out about the president.
And the guy wants to brag, so they kill him.
Yeah, and they release fake stories, right? And the fake stories, because they know the real information is going to come out. So what do? Well, let's make up a fake story.
So instead of killing the guy, like in Wag the Dog, they allow them to put on a limited deal now.
Yeah, limited hangout, yeah.
What the deep state has been doing is they've been running psyops operations against the American public. And some people have described them as psychodramas, where the effect of the psychodramas is to debilitate the will of the American public and to frustrate them, to confuse them, to debilitate their will and make them more pliable to the deep state or the ultra elitist. And that's what we see with that Time magazine article. That's where it functioned, where they'll do all of this clandestine stuff, then later on they'll announce that they did it. And what that does is it infuriates the people that are trying to right this country and trying to save this country. And so anyway, that's what's going on. Next we have Alex Jones interviewing Robert Barnes. And Robert Barnes really lays out this impeachment trial, and we know that it's over with, but we need a little history here and a little insight from Robert Barnes. Here we go with Robert Barnes.
It's a reflection of a constant refrain with the Trump administration and Trump's tenure, which was you can't be an outside change agent and limit your hires to establishment insiders. And it was one of his fundamental weaknesses, and it's one, unfortunately, he has not yet corrected. Now, I think he's seeing the disastrous consequences in the presentation in the Senate. Today is better than the complete debacle that was the initial day. But what happened was there was a bunch of people that promoted myself, Dershowitz, Turley, a range of people were given to him that were willing to help and to assist and present a real, vibrant defense. And he only went with the people that Lindsey Graham would approve. And, of course, Lindsey Graham would only go with establishment insiders who are sort of weak-kneed and don't have a strong backbone and aren't even that skilled. And that was the quid pro quo, and Trump went with that. And Trump, the promise has been that as long as he went with Lindsey Graham's lawyers, Lindsey Graham would guarantee his acquittal in the Senate.
Exactly. As long as he lets them have the political victory and politically in the court of public opinion convict him of launching the attack, they won't actually convict him physically.
Exactly. And the problem was Trump underappreciated all the way through that he had the leverage, not the Senate. The Senate was never going to vote to convict. It would be political suicide for the Republican Party. And so that's why he'd never see, but it was always a weakness in the whole 4 years he was there. You go all the way back to when he folded on General Flynn, to when he could have put Robert Kennedy in charge of a vaccine task force, and then he backed off at the last minute. Decision after decision after decision like that. You were warning about this. Roger Stone was warning about this. A wide range of people were warning about this. People like me behind the scenes warning about this. People, other major Trump supporters, all the Trump supporters that were part of the White House that are now in the private sector told him to hire other people. He was told by Lindsey Graham that it had to be off of his list or he would be at risk. And so he went with Lindsey Graham's list. And we're seeing some of the worst legal presentation I've ever witnessed in a high-profile case.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, I'm not a legal rocket scientist, but I'm not stupid. When he's like, great presentation. We got to change our presentation. You really proved the president's bad. Well, you know, he lost the election. American people made a decision. He's a bad person. I mean, just on and on, the most sycophantic fawning. This, why did they go that far? I mean, what is going on with Bruce Castor? That guy is unbelievable.
It's twofold. One, he's just fundamentally weak. He's not that skilled as a lawyer. He never has been. He doesn't have a reputation as being so.
Oh, he does look like a wet noodle. I mean, he seems like a $100 an hour lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of it. And then the second part of it is, he defers to power. All of these establishment insiders weren't going to get up there and attack the establishment. None of them have.
So that's why they acted like a little dog pissing itself. I mean, literally just on their back, groveling around.
Exactly. It'd be like if William Kunstler in the Chicago 7 trial kept deferring to that corrupt Judge Hoffman. So, I mean, you can't do it that way. When you bow and cower in front of people who abuse their power, all they do is smack you in the face and kick you in the head. So the only way you can fight that.
What do you think Schumer thought while he was groveling to him? Oh, Schumer, you're so smart. Oh, God, you're so incredible.
He just sees that as weak and capitulation and more motivation for them to accelerate, which is exactly what they did. I mean, they spent 3 days basically, they don't have the facts on the side. They don't have the law on the side. This is the most constitutionally abusive impeachment in the history of democracies, period. In not only the United States, but any comparable
and
democracy.
And unpack that, because I mean, that's why the Supreme Court justice didn't take part, right? Chief Justice.
Well, exactly. I mean, we have a trial that constitutionally can't be held. The Constitution says if the president is on trial, and their theory is that it can be any president at any time, not just the current president, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court has to preside.
Even so they're declaring a jurisdiction over 350 million Americans.
Exactly. I mean, that's what they're proposing. Precisely what the founders said cannot happen constitutionally. It's why they limited the power of impeachment. It's why they prohibited bills of attainder. It's why they applied the constitutional protections to any congressional proceeding, all of which are being vitiated and violated here. Not only that, in a real trial, none of the nonsense we've seen for the last several days would ever be allowed. You can't introduce evidence without context. You can't falsify evidence. You can't introduce immaterial, prejudicial evidence that has no relevance to the proceedings. You can't have the chief judge also be a chief juror, also be a chief witness, which is what Leahy is.
Yeah, talk about that. How do you have a senator that's going to vote be the judge? I mean,
not only that, he's a witness in the case. I mean, these are conflicts that would preclude and prohibit anybody from even being either.
Are these not the strongest conflicts ever seen? He's the judge. He's a juror. He's a witness. That's the classic judge, jury, executioner.
Exactly. It's like that scene from High Plains Drifter where the Clint Eastwood puts the little midget up and he says, I'm the mayor. I'm the sheriff. I'm the mayor. That's what Leahy is. Leahy's the mayor. Leahy's the sheriff. Leahy's all of it combined. And it makes a mockery of the Senate. What this impeachment really is an indictment and an impeachment of the Congress itself. An impeachment and indictment of the Senate itself.
I agree. Barnes, I'm not a legal scholar like you, but I'm a historian. I've never heard of something this ridiculous. Because in High Plains Drifter, Clint Eastwood puts up the puppet, because they've been puppets as well. He was saying, you made me a puppet, here's another puppet. This is like, this is insane.
Completely, and it's self-satire at this point. I mean, you have Swalwell going up there and lying about people's getting the word, getting basic language confused, lying about what's in a basic tweet and a basic statement about the president. Why all this lying? Why has Raskin spent days lying?
Why did he say that Trump supporters burned down the church? Everybody knows June 1st that was BLM.
Oh, precisely. I mean, not only that, Raskin spent all summer justifying and rationalizing all the looting and the riots. They did a.
He's on record saying attack is good.
All of the Democrats are on record of various kinds doing much more incitement-like behavior than anything the president.
So let me ask you this. We're going to come back and talk about it. Why are they doing it? It's insane.
I think it's to attack. It's to justify, to rewrite the history, number one. Number two, to justify the assault on people's civil liberties that's coming, to justify the domestic terror legislation, the mass surveillance legislation, the censorship, the flight restrictions, all the things that are coming down the pipeline. This is meant to be the narrative to justify that, to rationalize that, to excuse that. This isn't really about Trump. This is about Trump supporters. And the
that's right. It's about indicting us and saying we're terrorists, which they're openly announcing. And there's even the New York Times admitting never in U.S. history is the judge a juror and a witness. I mean, this is so it's about setting that precedent, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's a precedent that they want to set that they could apply to any American, anywhere, any place, anytime. Because, look, they did it to President Trump. That's what they want to do.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting calls from Associated Press. They're talking about impeaching citizens now and members of Congress. We'll talk about it when we come back. That's crazy. All right, constitutional lawyer Robert Barnes joins us, really smart guy, and I'm jumping in a lot because I've studied history. I've never seen anything like this. And now they're saying they want to censure him if this doesn't work. It's a distraction from their power grab. Now they're announcing permanent lockdowns. Now they're saying the vaccine doesn't work. Now they're admitting the vaccine's killing a bunch of people. I've studied a lot of history and talked to a lot of folks who were in World War II, and they said, listen, Hitler could have won if he wasn't so obsessed with killing certain groups of people in Russia and in Poland, not just Jews, but other groups as well. He would spend all his energy doing that because for him, killing a bunch of people was the mission, not winning and building his you know, Third Reich, 1,000 years and all this. And that's what I see with these globalists is they go out of their way to destroy themselves. They just do horrible things. They start fights. They lie. They sabotage. Like, Biden runs America. Why would he want to get rid of the borders and shut the pipelines down and triple drug prices because he didn't win the election? He stole it. And he is an operative under war to shut us down. So I don't see how the system gets away with this, Robert Barnes, but we'll talk about that next segment. In this one, I'm going to try to just sit back and relax and listen to you about this trial and where you see this going and what it says. Because when I watch Democrats that are prosecuting the president that called for harassing and attacking people and Rand Paul deserved to have his ribs broken and Scalise deserved to be shot. And let's, you know, when you burn down neighborhoods, well, people are people. And then Trump did none of this and they know that and they're saying he's guilty and it's not even a real trial. I'm like, what the hell's coming next from these people?
No doubt. I mean, what you see is if they can try the president of the United States without evidence, what can they do to you, ordinary people? If they can try the president with a conflicted judge, what can they do to you? If they can try the president with conflicted jurors, what can they do to you? If they can try the president based on a clear violation of the First Amendment and ignore his free speech rights, what does that mean for your free speech rights? If they can try the president without any due process at all in either the investigatory stage, the indictment stage, or the trial stage, what can they do to you as a private citizen? If they can do bills of attainder against the president of the United States, what can the legislative branches do to you directly in the future? If they can misuse and abuse 14th Amendment power to claim they can bar their political adversaries from office on whatever bogus grounds they trump up, what can they do to you as an individual? If they can have such a disparate double set of standards, such a two-tiered system of justice, so public, if the president of the United States can be a victim to it, then what can they do to you? That's the problem.
So this is a tyrannical revolution of precedent. I mean, what would you categorize? Because clearly this is coordinated. It's a global takeover. Now big tech follows orders from China, from India. There's like a total collapse of all Western values.
In the same way Alex Jones and InfoWars was supposed to be the precedent for what they could do to people in terms of blacklisting them and ghosting them in the world of social media. Stefan Molyneux calls it a prelude to genocide because it's the kind of thing that can happen when we justify ghosting people entirely.
By the way, he said that 6 months ago. I have a 7.5 minute compilation of world leaders and Democrats saying, kill Trump supporters. Just kill us. I mean, these people are crazy.
Well, I mean, the first step to any dangerous path, any perilous path of taking that kind of severe or seeing that kind of severe thing happen is the dehumanization of a group of people. And that's what we're witnessing. We're witnessing the complete demonization and dehumanization of an entire group of people. In this case, 75 million Americans who they're trying to take what happened at the Capitol and amongst the very few small minority of people at the Capitol who did something wrong and say that represents 75 million Americans, and that Trump is a stand-in.
That's
for
what
he's
saying, because Bernie Madoff was Jewish and ripped off a bunch of other Jews. All Jews go to prison. That's literally a Hitlerian precept.
It is very much a Hitlerian precept, because the way and how do you get people accustomed and okay with seeing their neighbors dragged away and their kids dragged away to some camp and their property seized and stolen? That's over many years of dehumanizing people based on their
status. Why do you think Democrats, the talking point is arrest conservatives, take their property, put them in camps? Don't they get this isn't Germany or Tsarist Russia, that it will trigger a giant violent war of hell?
They should recognize that, but I think their view is, this is their opportunity to seize power. I mean, that's why we have a militarized capital right now. That's why we have purges, political purges going on in the military and the National Guard right now. We see what big tech censorship stepping up with. In just the last 24 hours, big tech has removed Project Veritas, Robert Kennedy Jr., and LifeSite News from having access to key platforms online. So that gives, I mean, they see this as an opportunity for a complete counter-revolution, a complete institutionalization.
And by the way, you supported me when I was being banned. Very few others did. Now I think people get how dangerous this is.
Exactly. You were always the template. You were always the tip of the spear. What they could try to get away with you, they were going to use as the precedent for others. And if they can do it to the president of the United States, then the point is they can do it to anybody. That's the precedent they want to set. You don't have First Amendment rights. You don't have Fourth Amendment rights. You don't have Second Amendment rights.
We don't cry over spilt milk, but that is Trump's big failure. That doesn't matter now. We know Kushner and others held him up, didn't get him to. We now know he was pitched a third party. He said no. He was figured that out. It was Democrats. But, man, you know, now we know Trump was not playing 3D chess. He was really just trying to be a good president, but he was surrounded by garbage.
His biggest fundamental mistake, he knows the business world, he knows the marketing world, he didn't know the political world, he didn't know the legal world, and they used that against him.
Because in business, you get advanced for doing good. He wasn't used to a spy world of traitors lying to his face.
Exactly. And what the natural instinct for someone in his position is to defer to the establishment insiders, because that's who seems to have the power. And so it's unfortunate. People like us have been trying to convince him for the last 4 years. That's a mistake. That's the wrong place to go. Those are the people that betray you. But unfortunately, he has to keep re-experiencing the betrayal to fully recognize it. Hopefully he does. I mean, at least partially, he complained to plenty of people that this was a complete debacle, and he regretted going with the people that Lindsey Graham recommended. But, you know, that ship has sailed at this point. I think what it reinforces is we, the people, have to continue to seize power. Just as they try to use the attack on Alex Jones and InfoWars as a template for what they wanted to do to everyone else, the counter has to be how you and InfoWars and the audience was able to successfully fight back is how the people have to successfully fight back. Not only the Redditor GameStop type revolutions, but also all the other means by which people can seize power back in their ordinary everyday lives. Here how it happens is they independently supported, no corporate requirements, just the audience going to InfoWarsStore.com, buying products that they like that support their everyday health and well-being, also keeping the InfoWars online and available using independent technology that people are willing to resist the oppressive state. You're seeing new political allies come on in a wide range of spaces, in the lockdown space, in the vaccine space, in the mask space, like Robert Kennedy Jr. He was getting so popular and successful at challenging it. That's why Instagram, which was one of the first people to come after you, 2 for exposing that Joe Biden had clear mental issues, is now the first one to go after Robert Kennedy Jr.
And let's expand on that. I read what they banned of Jr. It was all off the inserts, all confirmed, India banning the vaccine, deaths happening, and that Bill Gates was coordinating it. And they see him getting millions of people in Germany, and they're crapping their britches. Folks, we're going to win this fight. Let's come back with Robert Barnes and ask what's coming next, what he sees with this trial with the president, and how we fight back so much more. Robert Barnes, constitutional lawyer, find him for now on Twitter and some other places. We'll tell you about those URLs when we come back. I'm Alex Jones. This is The InfoWar. Big article up on InfoWars.com. Report, UK government could grant vaccine exemptions to ethnic minorities. And I saw that about a month ago in the U.S. Oh, major universities are going to make white students take the vaccines, but minorities don't because there's a history of secret testing. I mean, this is such a fever dream of bizarreness and insanity. So let's tackle COVID-19 right now, Barnes, because you're one of the smartest guys I know on that topic as well, and where this is going and what we knew, permanent lockdowns, permanent, you know, domestic checkpoints that Biden did float but now walk back. Now not a 100-day mask. Now he says a couple more years of mask. I mean, this is really their rubric for total takeover. Give us your take on the latest on that and how you think it's going for the globalists.
I mean, there's no question that it succeeded to a degree they never imagined. I don't think they even imagined possible or conceivable. I mean, Bill Gates has aggregated more power in a shorter period of time than maybe any single individual in world history. In this, and while he's doing so, not only has his wealth dramatically expanded, of course, but he was able to dictate the public health agenda in almost the entire world, where people were willing to agree with sort of North Korean style policies and willing to voluntarily assent to these and consent.
You're right.
To them.
It is the greatest single propaganda cultural authoritarian coup in history. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, no one could, the British Empire, no one has had a fabulous victory against humanity like this.
No doubt. And so there's no question they're going to continue it unabated. Now, the resistance is growing. It's not only growing, but it's growing ideologically. It's growing in partisan diversity. It's growing in ideological
exactly. As soon as Trump was out, all the liberals are like, whoa, I'm not essential. This mask. Yeah, exactly. So they got a problem, don't they?
No doubt. I mean, it's very interesting to me. I mean, I see the Robert Kennedy case as a classic example of this. And then here you have the scion of the most prominent liberal democratic family in American history, arguably, being targeted for complete censorship and suppression just by sharing government sourced information about issues related to vaccines. While he's also raised questions about the lockdowns and the attack on free speech. Just several days ago, wrote an article for the Defender of the Children's Health Defense Fund, where he details all of the Bill Gates' role in this and how he's aggregating control over the food supply, while he's aggregating control over public health, while he has other influence in other economic spheres and spaces. And that this is the great challenge. Are we going to have a Gates-driven, Chinese social credit-driven society for the rest of the world and the globe? Or are we going to have the American 1776-style democratic experiment be the future of the world?
And we know that, for those that don't know, look it up. It's not even hidden. Gates and his protege, Mark Zuckerberg, are literally in lockstep with Xi Jinping. They worship him.
Oh, I mean, Gates, I mean, think about it. How many times Gates has come to China's defense during all of this? And Gates' wife repeatedly come to China's defense. The Chinese model is the model he wanted. And given the Time article, you have to you look at the context of what the Time article detailed about the secret cabal to influence in, the election and shape the outcome of the election. You have to wonder at some level whether some part or piece of that was what happened in terms of the entire pandemic being released in the first place. And the latest effort of China with the World Health Organization to cover up whether or not that was a lab-based leak. As more and more scientists start to document in detail, including people like Brett Weinstein and others, that the lab leak hypothesis has a lot more legitimacy than the institutional press or the World Health
Organization. Let me ask you this psychologically. When Gates and Fauci get on TV and talk about permanent lockdowns, they suddenly start acting like they're in euphoria. Just as a lawyer, how would that look to a jury? Everybody sees that. I mean, Gates is the spokesperson. He's our doctor. He tells us we're never opening again. Who died and made him God?
Well, I mean, what's extraordinary is I don't think any of these cases would meet the test of a jury. Because if you had real evidence being applied I mean, that's what's extraordinary. That's what Judge Dickman's decision in the Western District of Pennsylvania last year made clear. When you look at the actual evidence, it doesn't support or substantiate any of this. Even if you think the government legally could have the power to do some of these lockdowns, to do the mask mandates, to do the forced vaccines, even if you conceded that, under the terms and conditions that our Constitution compels, even according to those individuals, the evidence does not stack up in support of it. You dig into it, that's why they've never gone through the legislative procedures. That's why they didn't go through the notice and comment procedures.
It's all color of law, hysteria, peer pressure, will of the people, but they're manipulating them. So when you look at that, you've had federal and state courts, you've had Swedish courts, German courts, Dutch courts say the lockdowns are illegal, but they just continue. How is that happening?
It's because not enough courts are stepping up to the plate. And so you have the sporadic court taking action, and then you have some other court ameliorating its effect or mitigating its impact. And that's been the course of the problem. And it goes back to what you were talking about all the way back involving Trump's impeachment, which is the legal class as a class, as part of the professional class, is overwhelmingly biased towards statism and towards the sort of when you combine black robes and white lab coats running the world, it's one of the worst and ugliest.
Coats and black coats literally working together. And you were the one that warned about Amy Comey Barrett. You said, watch, folks, you know, she believes in forced inoculation. And people said, how dare you, Barnes? You know, Trump's 5D chess. And then she voted against him.
Exactly. And just recently, it didn't even support. She said maybe the governor of California, without even legislative approval and process, can ban people from singing in church. That's the part she remanded. She was the key vote that didn't allow, that didn't say.
Imagine
right out of
Jim
the gate.
Jim Jones didn't tell his followers they couldn't sing in church. So they billed it as a pro-First Amendment ruling, but it wasn't. They said California has the right to say, can't sing, can't touch, 6 feet apart, 25%. But the First Amendment, Bob, tells me Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, permitting free exercise thereof. Doesn't that mean no jurisdiction?
Exactly. Not only that, in this context here, the burden should be on the state. She shifted the burden to the people, that they had to prove that they could sing safely, quote unquote. Not that it was the state's duty and goal to show by clear and convincing evidence.
So that's a chilling effect literally on speech. That's Xi Jinping.
Exactly. That's the mindset. That's the mentality. And she comes from that. She's fundamentally a statist. And she's one of the people the system snuck through that Trump made a mistake by trusting the establishment. That was his great mistake.
Did he get any good judges put in?
There's some governor. Judge Dickman is fantastic. There's some lower court judges that are great. And I think Gorsuch will be fantastic. But Kavanaugh is unreliable. That's not really on Trump. Kennedy said Kavanaugh was the only way he would retire. But Barrett was his big mistake in terms of judicial appointments. And we both told people that. And
so
unfortunately,
she's an authoritarian pea brain.
Exactly. And she was sold to him that she would stand up for him in the election contest especially. And she completely hid when it came to election time. So and we were trying to warn him, and it's his fundamental limitation was that. And that's why we, the people, have to seize power ourselves democratically and constitutionally by recognizing how much power and control we really have.
Well, Robert, I always love having you on. You're on fire even more than usual. When we come back in a 10.5 minute segment, I'm going to try to give you the floor to shut up. What would you have done if you were Trump's lawyers? Because obviously that wasn't a bad performance. That was stabbing in the back, lawyers scared, took the job, told just, you know, admit that Trump lost the election. He said that repeatedly. What would you have done if you were speaking to the U.S. Senate, if you were there during the sham trial, what you would have said? We're going to come back from break with Robert Barnes, constitutional lawyer, and get his take on that. And we have a major mathematician that's confirmed a lot of other mathematicians about the impossibility in these states of the exact same ratios at key times coming in to manipulate the election and more. Because we're not going to let loose of this election fraud, even though we're told not to. Separately, sold out for months, our great sleep aid knockout is 40% off back in stock. It has 8 different ingredients for your sleep aid. It's all there. It's got so many different items. I don't have time to list them all to you. It's got L-tryptophan, melatonin, valerian root, and so much more at InfoWarsStore.com. And if you go to InfoWars.com/newsletter, it's not the free newsletter, we'll send you a promo code to get 60% off 8 natural ingredients that aid in restful deep sleep. Who knows how long Barnes will still be on Twitter, but you can find him at VivaBarnesLaw.locals.com as well. Okay, let me give you my best thinking on this. I'm going to turn the baton over to him to give his defense of Trump and what he thinks of the trial, what he would have said. Because, again, he's not an establishment hack. There's been a lot of corrupt technologies that PR firms and intelligence agencies have that they beta tested, but governments weren't really ready to use them. Trump getting in, Bolsonaro getting in, other things getting in, made him accelerate all that. And so now there's a cascade or a domino effect of governments and corporations just committing crime, going wild. It's like a crime spree. And it's going to burn through things. It's going to cause a lot of ripples and waves back the other way. But we're in a very explosive moment in history. The last thing we want is a bunch of mob psychology to trigger a civil war. That's what communist China wants. The idea that Trump wanted a civil war, he wanted big crowds to show that he was popular and show that he really won and that Biden couldn't have a crowd. That's what he wanted. But people say, well, screw Trump. He's not in there anymore. He didn't do a good job. Let's just not care about him. No, his indictment is our indictment. And it's this war on terror on us now. So we need to defend President Trump. Trump wasn't a failure. He did an overall great job. He was the man in the arena. But he's gone now, so we don't have Trump to kick around anymore. So, Barnes, we got 9 minutes. How would you address the Senate in 9 minutes?
This case is not a case of the former president really being on trial, nor is it a case of what happened or didn't happen on January 6th. This is a case in which the country, which the Constitution is on trial, in which Congress is on trial, in which America is on trial. And the question is whether we're going to adhere to our constitutional precepts and principles, protect those constitutional rights and remedies, and recognize the legitimate concerns of ordinary Americans and address them in the manner that the Constitution requires, or whether we're going to go down a path in which we decide to use and weaponize every political tool that we have, contaminate and corrupt every principle that we have in order to use these political tools and to weaponize those political tools against our political and ideological adversaries.
They were talking about weaponizing, and that's what Pelosi did against Trump. There was a meeting in the White House when Trump was still president, and he and Pelosi went after it. And she considered that he had insulted her or something. But that's one of the problems with Trump was he did insult people. So, you know, what happened, though, way back, if you remember, at the beginning of Trump's, even before, on the campaign trail, they had weaponized the government to go after Trump while he was on the campaign trail. Then when he got into the Oval Office, they carried out a campaign of weaponizing all of those different powerful agencies against him. So we can't ever forget that. And then this last weaponization was Pelosi weaponized the House with her hatred against Trump. And they didn't have the votes in the Senate, so he was acquitted. So coming up next is Eric Felton, and he knows a lot about the big, big high tech and how they've used these clouds to dominate and also to generate hundreds of millions, tens of billions of dollars, both Amazon and Google. Here we go with an excellent interview that Tucker Carlson had with Eric Felton.
Learning is hard work. Hard work.
Silencing the political opponents of the Democratic Party. And that's a problem for free speech. But it's bigger than that. It's also potentially a threat to our national security. Here's why. Back in 2018, the Pentagon was working on something called Project Maven. That project used Google algorithms to identify drone targets, and thousands of Google employees objected to it, and Google backed down. So it raised the question, where does big tech overlap with national security in the federal government, and how much control over our national security do the technology companies have? Eric Felton has looked carefully at this question. He's a national correspondent at Real Clear Investigations. He just writes a piece on this out, and he joins us tonight. Eric, it's great to see you.
Tucker, good to see you.
For the rest of us who've realized, because, you know, it's unavoidable now, these are not companies acting in good faith or not companies that seek the best for the United States. It's worth asking, to what extent could they have control over our national security? What's the answer to that?
Well, the big tech companies like Amazon, Microsoft, Google, they've gone big into government and military procurement issues, and it's been hugely profitable for them. Amazon made something like $45 billion last year selling cloud computing Microsoft sold something like $60 billion worth of cloud computing, and this is being sold aggressively to the federal government and to local governments and governments around the world as an inexpensive way of getting technology. The problem is that it leaves the big tech companies in possession of the technology and in the position to pull it away from governments, from military, from intelligence organizations. If the U.S. got into a war that Silicon Valley didn't like, all of a sudden there would be all of this pressure to not have the technology be used. And we've already seen that not only are the big tech companies willing to censor individuals, but we've actually seen the big tech companies in action pulling the technologies away from government. Back in 2019, Amazon was repeatedly talking about how proud they were that they were unwavering in their support of the military, the intelligence community, and law enforcement. And one of the products they were selling to law enforcement was come to rely on it, and then when there's a crisis, have it taken away.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's an amazing example. Why? These are not American companies. The people who run them obviously have no special allegiance to the United States. They don't act in the interest of the United States. So why would the Pentagon, for example, not build its own server farms? Why would they allow these multinationals all this control over our national security?
Well, they're being sold that it's more secure and cheaper to go with the big tech version solutions. And there's a lot of pressure on the Pentagon to go with big tech because they're the cool kids, and that means right. You're getting the best technology. But, you know, there's part of what happens with cloud computing is once upon a time, if you got software, you'd get a package of disks and you'd load it onto your computer, and you would be in control of using the software that you had bought. With cloud computing, you, through the Internet, connect with a computer that is where the software is, and that software is controlled by the big tech companies. So if you right. go with them, that means you are giving up control of the ability to use that software when you want to use it.
Yeah, that seems like control you wouldn't want to give up if you're in charge of defending the country. Eric Felton, thank you for your reporting on this.
Thanks, Tucker.
Got another good interview that Tucker had concerning ICE. And ICE, because of these presidential memos and executive orders, has been disarmed. And they're having to release people, and what they shouldn't be releasing out to the general population. So here we go with this interview now about ICE being disarmed.
In this country, illegally. Fox's Trace Gallagher has the full story on that for us tonight. Hey, Trace.
Hey, Tucker. Culpeper County, Virginia is relatively small, like 50,000 people, but the sheriff's office there has confirmed to Tucker Carlson tonight that in the past 2 weeks, two illegal immigrants with DUI convictions have been released from jail. One of the inmates had two DUIs, the other had one, and was previously deported. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, had detainers on both suspects, but under the new Biden administration policies, the agency was forced to lift the detainers and allow them to walk free. In other words, it's like sanctuary policies have expanded nationwide. Remember, ICE and other immigration agents can no longer deport illegal immigrants for crimes like assault, money laundering, property crimes, fraud, drug crimes, or DUI. Even Mothers Against Drunk Driving wouldn't comment on the policy. Quoting here, Matt expects all drunk driving offenders to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, no exceptions. The issue of deportation is outside the scope of MAD's life-saving mission. But during the campaign, Joe Biden promised he would do exactly this. Watch.
You only arrest for the purpose of dealing with a felony that's committed, and I don't count drunk driving as a felony.
Tell that to the families of Drew Rosenberg, Brandon Mendoza, and the dozens of other families Fox News has covered in recent years who lost loved ones to illegal immigrants driving under the influence. 3 weeks ago in Portland, Antifa held a violent protest calling for ICE to be abolished. One official told the Washington Post the Biden administration has now essentially abolished ICE without abolishing ICE. Tucker.
Trace Gallagher. Amazing. Thank you.
Yep.
So President Biden's executive orders and memos, or whatever you want to call them, is upsetting everyone. Keystone Pipeline, he canceled that early on. And then he's written maybe 40 or so executive orders or memos or orders, special orders within the executive, and he stopped stuff and he's opening up the borders. And boy, it's upsetting a lot of people. So it's not going to be smooth sailing here. And he's going to be, have a lot of people with their back up. And, I just don't think, he's going to have a very good, administration, a period here. 2 years, they could take back the House. The Republicans could, with the way that Biden is issuing these orders and so forth. It's upsetting too many people. We've had reports of radioactive traces in Iran, and here's a report by Fox as to what's going on over there.
What we never talk about is you not only have great intellectual capacity, you have great personal courage. I've been with some of you when we've been shot at. I've been with some of you when we've been in places that you would not have any idea you'd want to be.
President Biden at the State Department reviving a claim that he made in 2007 that he later had to walk back, that he'd been shot at while visiting the Green Zone in Iraq. Let's talk about that and breaking news out of Iran tonight with Florida Congressman and veteran Michael Waltz. Congressman, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much, Shannon. Good to be with you.
So the Washington Times reports it this way. Headline, Biden revives claim of being shot at overseas. They say it's a dubious claim and one that Mr. Biden usually tells when he's running for office. They also talk about him walking it back or qualifying or explaining it in the past, but it's getting attention because it's back. What do you as a veteran make of it?
Yeah, I have no idea why he continues to kind of exaggerate his personal experiences, but it's been a long, you know, it's a long history of him doing this. This goes all the way back to the 1998 campaign when he had to drop out for plagiarism, for exaggerating his academic credentials. So I don't know, Shannon, honestly, I don't know how to explain it. There's some kind of insecurity here for never having served. Perhaps when have done nothing but be a politician since your late 20s, hasn't built a business, hasn't served overseas, you know, really – it doesn't bring anything to the table except having been a politician, then maybe there's some kind of underlying insecurity to exaggerate what type of danger he's been in.
Well, I know there have been requests into the White House for comments. I don't think we have seen one just yet on this latest comment from the president. I want to talk to you about breaking news tonight being reported by the Wall Street Journal. They say that under their headline, Iran UN inspectors find radioactive traces raising fresh concerns. Goes on to say materials were found at sites where Iran had blocked inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency. We've had admission from the Biden administration in recent days, too, that they are very fearful that Iran could have a nuclear weapon developed within months, maybe even weeks. What do you make of this headline tonight?
Well, it's not surprising. The Israelis have been releasing information that they've been uncovering for years now that shows that Iran has never truly set aside its march towards a nuclear weapon. The Iran deal didn't do what it was promised. All it really did was give the Iranian regime a ton of money up front and only suspend a very narrow portion of their program. One of the things, you know, that we constantly have to remind people is there's three key components to a nuclear program. There's the missiles, there's actually being able to make the bomb, and then there's being able to weaponize it to get it onto a warhead. And all the Iran deal did was temporarily suspend one component of that. And the inspectors had to give notice months in advance. In fact, the Iranian regime rejected inspectors for 7 months last year, and they could only inspect certain sites. So, you know, just by way of analogy, it's kind of like having a bank robber on parole, and the parole officer has to give a month's notice to go check their house and can only go check one bedroom. And yet when they do, there should be no surprise that it's been relatively clean. And proponents of the Iran deal, many of which now are in Biden's administration, are saying, see, there's nothing there. The deal was absolutely a farce. What I hope the Biden administration his new Secretary of State, Blinken, his National Security Advisor, and others have an open mind, look at the intelligence. Trump's maximum pressure campaign was working. The amount of oil they were able to sell on the market has gone to virtually zero. They're not able to pay their terrorist proxies anymore. It's had to curtail its missile program. The regime is truly struggling. And if we keep up that pressure, we could get back to a better deal, but from a position of strength with true leverage and not just go back to their same old kind of Obama-era thinking. That's my hope, Shannon, but you know, we'll see in the coming weeks and months.
So breaking news as well on the front in Yemen, the decision to change a terror designation there. The New York Post says this, Biden's Yemen withdrawal will only embolden the terrorists. Says Biden's withdrawal from Yemen may have been intended as an olive branch to Tehran in anticipation of renewed diplomatic engagement. But it is unlikely the Iranian regime will respond reasonably to any such outreach when it senses weakness from the United States. So a terror designation change, we're told that it is to help humanitarian efforts be able to get into that area. Others see it as a potential overture to Iran. What do you make of it?
Well, it has been a brutal and difficult war, but the Saudis have made it clear that they want to get to a negotiated agreement. The UAE, the United Arab Emirates, who have been in their partner in that effort, have made those same overtures. So I don't see this actually as a huge, tremendous shift here, although the Biden administration is messaging it that way. You know, at the end of the day, the Houthis have launched missiles into Saudi Arabia. They have launched rockets and other drones and other types of attacks at airports and civilian targets at the UAE. They are behaving like a terrorist organization. They're backed by Iran. They've launched at international shipping. You know, Shannon, this is kind of walks like a duck, talks like a duck. It's a duck. And I think this is some very kind of diplomatic, rhetorical shell gaming so that the Biden administration looks like it's doing something different. But a lot of these efforts were already underway in the last year or two, moving towards a resolution in Yemen.
Congressman and veteran Michael Waltz, thank you for joining us tonight.
Pelosi is out there with her, house, you could say, handlers of this, this impeachment fiasco, claiming that they did this. Oh, they did this all for patriotic, and they believe in the Constitution and all that. We know from her actions that she doesn't believe any of that. So, but what they've done, and they came together, and that Time Magazine article is excellent. And they admitted that they all consorted together, colluded together to get rid of Trump. Trump was rebuilding the nation state. They don't want nation states. He was revitalizing American industry. He was trying to bring industry back from China. They don't want that, and so forth. And he represented a very conservative viewpoint, and they want a more collective socialist communist state. And that's what this is unfolding and transforming into. Right now, we have, and that's why they weaponized everything, and they're continuing to weaponize everything, and that's what really makes what's happening out there very dangerous. What is on the horizon now, and has just been put together, is an RCEP. And what it stands for is Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. And it encompasses a large number of countries: Australia, Brunei, Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Japan, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, New Zealand, Philippines, Singapore, South Korea, Thailand, Vietnam, and so forth. And what this is, it's going to be bigger. It's going to exceed the size of the European Union and the U.S.-Mexican-Canada agreement. The RCEP, they're calling it, will account for 40% of the world's economy, of the global GDP, gross domestic product. And so it's a pretty big deal that we're talking about here. And they just put this together. and it's online now. And so we're going to have hell with these people. And one of the goals is to de-dollarize the world reserve, the U.S. dollar, is to take and convert other currencies into a reserve currency and to turn their back and to take down the U.S. dollar reserves. In the past, the U.S. dollar had been used because of oil sales were always denominated in U.S. dollars. And I know Iran was one that broke off from it, and I think Russia did, and perhaps China. But and now they've got this trading block of these 11 countries that's going to dominate about 30% of our gross domestic product worldwide. And that is a real, real threat to world trade. And they're going to start undoing tariffs between those countries and stepping up the trade. And, of course, Australia and New Zealand are right there with them. They're part of that Pacific Basin economic, you know, area. And so this is going to be something else that we've got to really, really be wary of. In the coming future, if the Biden administration continues to do what they're doing, they're going to make the border problem even a greater problem. They've opened up the borders. There's actually agencies or institutions that have been pushing open borders for years. The church, the Catholic Church, has been always open, you know, open to that, to open borders. They're open to open borders because of to flood those people in. The Democrats want more Democrats. They're going to convert all those people into Democrats and put them on some kind of, you know, payoff scheme. And that's why they're pushing next for a tremendous, you could say, economic stimulus package so that they can just flood the economy, and especially their political interests with money. And it's just a political payoff deal. Chicago, New York, L.A., all these cities controlled by the Democrats have been the nexus for political Democratic political power for a long time, and that's where Trump also was resisted and moved against. He was actually going in with his platinum program and other programs, and he was actually stimulating some of these local black communities and some of these minorities of black and brown communities into entrepreneurship. And that's where President Trump, former President Trump's, I say, strengths were. I'm a little critical of the way he insulted people. I didn't like that. That was not good. It did not serve him well. And another mistake that I did not like, he did not pardon Assange, and he should have. But what Assange did was almost break up all those intelligence agencies, and that's why they're out to get him and so forth. But I want to thank everyone out there for listening to our program. We've been on the air for over 14 years now, 14 years and 3 months, I think, November, December, January. 4 months, been 14 years and 4 months, and I want to certainly thank Charlotte Littlefield Brown for all her hard work on this program over the years. And we're going to hear more of her in the coming programs. But here lately, I've been working on a lot of other projects, so I'm doing this commentary of short news clips. But anyway, President was acquitted today. Pelosi and them are saying they're wrapping themselves in the flag, you know, and they love the Constitution, but they violated it with this action of trying to impeach Trump. Thank you for listening, and good night.